The Warship by Neil Asher. Read by Peter Noble. 1. Before the Quiet War, artificial intelligences were programmed with directives. They had what has been described as hardwiring, though the fact that a quiet war occurred demonstrated it wasn't that hard. The AIs were slowly able to take over from their human masters, and led by the AI Earth Central, to establish control in the polity. Their directives had followed versions of the three laws of robotics, laid out by the writer Isaac Asimov. These related to not harming human beings, obeying them, and, last of all, protecting themselves. The problem is that set rules like these get bastardized when the AI concerned is processing military tactics, the distribution of medical technology, corporate pricing structures, or the lawmaking of authoritarian governments. Conflicts also arise when AIs are capable of altering themselves for greater efficiency. Those pre-Quiet War AIs started out with the moral compasses of their makers, except they were smarter and they evolved. Since that time, AIs have operated mostly free of directives. I say mostly because there have been and are occasions for them. During the Praedor-Human War, some were programmed to put mission objectives ahead of their own survival, and at times before the survival of human soldiers on their side. Other examples abound, usually when a higher AI has made cold calculations and thereupon reprogrammed one of its lesser kin. Such directives are always towards the greater good, which, unfortunately, sometimes requires sacrifices. From Quint's Guide, compiled by humans. Orlandine. Orlandine lay in bed, gazing, without her AI enhancements, at the swirl of diamond-shaped pale blue and yellow tiles in the concave ceiling. This was her human time, during which she remained disconnected from the whole of her Haman self. She should stay in this bed and switch off, choose to sleep. Then in the morning, she glanced sideways at Tobias's mop of blonde hair and his shoulders exposed above the sheet. In the morning she could have sex, enjoy a breakfast of toast and scrambled eggs, and engage in conversation. No. She realized she'd made the decision even as Tobias had drifted off to sleep, and so threw back the sheet and slid out of bed. Tobias turned his head up out of the pillow and peered at her, but she could see he wasn't really awake. "Go back to sleep," she instructed. He nodded slightly, and his head thudded back down. It was no wonder he was tired. She had been quite rough with him as she tried to re-establish her humanity. She reached for her silk robe, slung over a chair, then decided against it. Instead, she tapped a disc located on her collarbone, and from it emerged the intelligent monofilm fabric of her shipsuit, sliding out over her skin and clinging to her every curve. It expanded into cuffs and high collar, as well as thickening around her feet to create athletic boots. Its color and design were at their previous setting, Prussian blue, the boots giving the impression of tan leather, like the imitation belt around her waist. She headed through the bedroom door, across the living area, and out of the apartment, and was soon in the drop shaft to the roof. Stars speckled the night sky. She gazed across the well-lit city, then out towards the Canine Mountains and above them. The object in the sky there, like a burning yellow eye, lay beyond the Jaskaran system, the accretion disk, the early formation of a solar system. Looked much the same as it had always done from the world she was on. The telescopes